I wonder if you can think of a time when, for you, maybe everything just seemed like it went completely wrong. When you suddenly found yourself in a really difficult situation and it feels like everything has just fallen apart. You're at the end of what you got, at the end of your tether, and maybe you just don't know what to do. The language we used a lot a couple of weeks ago was the language of being broken. As Laura's mentioned, we're doing a series called It's Okay Not to Be Okay. And I gave the introduction to it a couple of weeks ago. We had a little break last week for a half marathon, and we carry on this week. And just to kind of sum up, really, in some ways, what we talked about 2 weeks ago, really it was saying, if we come to God needing nothing, if we come to God pretending that we need nothing from him, then nothing is probably what we will get. Actually, if we come and we recognize where we're weak, where we're broken, where we're struggling, actually, we find God comes and meets us in there. I'm going to continue through this series, looking at actually, well, why is it okay not to be okay? What is it that God can do when we find ourselves in that kind of place? And how do we respond? And I recognize there'll be some people here who this series and today meets with perhaps in a particular moment in where you are at the moment. And for others, as we've recognized already this morning, in a creative way, we come in different places. And as Laura encouraged you, not to switch off just as this isn't relevant right now. Because actually, all of us have known times in our lives where actually things have been really tough. And I'm sorry to break it to you, you'll probably know times in the future where things are really tough. And all the better to learn some of these truths now. We come today and we look at Gideon, and his story of where he began, of things just not being okay. Gideon, we find in Judges chapter 6. You might like to have it open if you've got one of the church Bibles. It's page 247. Or you can use your own Bible. I'll just say on the church Bible, it's page 247. And because at the beginning of chapter 6, we get the background, really, to what's going on. What is going on in the lives of God's people in the story of Gideon? And we pick up from those first few verses that God's people, as they sometimes did, were doing wrong. They turned from the Lord, and so he'd given them over to their enemies. And actually we find that they've not been occupied, but they've had to kind of retreat into the mountains, into somewhere where they can hide more easily, in somewhere that's a bit more defensible. They've retreated, they're hiding out in the mountains. And the particular thing that's kind of focused on here is what their enemies are doing to their crops. That their crops keep on being destroyed. Every year, around the time when the crops are growing, around harvest time, before they can harvest it in and they can store in the grain that they've grown, their enemies are coming and they are destroying their crops. One of the commentaries I read kind of likened it to saying, you know, if you grow things in your garden, if you grow vegetables or you grow flowers, you know, your neighbor comes along just when it's all looking like it's going to grow and bloom and fruit and just digs up the whole lot. Or maybe you're doing your coursework and you're just getting to the point where it's nearly finished and someone comes along and just rips it all up. I don't know if people actually do coursework anymore. I think they banned it. But something like that. So you've been working on something. And that kind of gets some of the kind of emotional pain of there's something that you've worked on hard and someone's come and broken. But actually, for the people of Israel at this time, it wasn't just about they've worked hard. This was their livelihood. This is more like falling victim to a scam and finding that half your year's wages have been stolen from your account. That's the impact we're talking about for God's people. And this has been going on for 7 years. For 7 years, their crops have been destroyed. This is pushing them into poverty. They are impoverished through what has happened. They come, they destroy their crops. They find that they are in a mess. And that's the situation that's going on when in verse 11 we read about the Lord, or the angel of the Lord who represents God himself, appears to Gideon. And we find Gideon in this situation. Gideon is threshing wheat in a wine press. Now, anybody want to take a guess as to what you think a wine press is used for? This is not a trick question. What is a wine press used for? Lots of people said pressing wine. Crushing grapes, good. So, you know, what do you put in a toaster? Toast. A wine press is used for crushing grapes. So when you read about Gideon threshing wheat in a wine press. We're a little bit disconnected from it, but it would be a bit like reading that someone was baking a cake with a cheese grater or washing their car with a football. Okay? You kind of would immediately go, no, that's not the way you do it. It's almost funny because it's so silly. Because generally, you would thresh wheat. The place you would do it would be a big open space, ideally somewhere near the kind of top of a hill, because you'd bash it all to separate, break up the wheat from the chaff, and then you'd chuck it in the air, and the wind would blow away the chaff, and the wheat would fall back down. That is what you do. You'd want it in an open space, somewhere maybe near the top of a hill, nice and breezy, big clear space. A wine press looks a bit more like this. It's a hole in the ground. So Gideon finds himself doing something you would normally do in a nice big open space in the top of a hill, in a hole in the ground. Gideon finds himself not up the top where he should be, but somewhere much more down the bottom, in a hole, in the depths. They've been so oppressed, they've retreated up into the mountains. The oppression on them is so much, he needs to hide away in a hole to do a job you'd normally do out in the open. Because they found themselves down, in a mess, in poverty, literally for Gideon, in a hole. And God shows up, and the angel of the Lord appears. And in my head, I picture him kind of leaning over the edge of the hole and says to Gideon, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." I don't know what you'd think if you were the one in the hole. Okay? I don't know if you're in that situation right now, or if you can, whatever that situation you might have thought of when I began, I said, think of a time when it's all gone wrong, and how you might respond to that. When God shows up and says, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." I think I might be tempted to say words you shouldn't say in polite conversation, yet alone say to God. "Really? Have you seen where I am? Do you know what's going on in our lives right now? I'm in a hole. Literally." Gideon does quite well. Gideon's response is a little bit more polite than mine might have been. He says, "Pardon me, Lord. Just a moment. But if the Lord really is with us, why has all this happened? But it seems to me a little bit more like you've abandoned us and given us over to the hand of Midian." Perhaps we might just want to say, "Do you even care?" Something of what Gideon's saying there is, do you even care about what's going on? And somewhere underneath the question, he's asking the question we so often ask. Why? Why? If you're really with us, why is all of this happening? If you really love me, Lord, why is this going on? If you're really here, why haven't you done something already? And sometimes when we ask why, what we really want is God to do something about it. And actually, we see something of that in God's next response. So he jumps on behind what Gideon's asking about, saying, "Well, if you're really with us," and he jumps to the question behind it. And he says to Gideon, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" He says to him, "Go in the strength that you have. I'm going to send you. I'm going to send you to do something about this situation." You're saying, "Am I really with you?" Well, I'm saying, I'm sending you to go and bring change here, to change it. I'm calling you out of this hole to go and do something about it. And sometimes God says to us, in the midst of our weakness and our brokenness, in whatever it is that means for us that we are not okay, to get up and to do something about it. Not being okay is not an excuse to do nothing. Because God says, go in the strength that you have. But of course, to Gideon, he's still down in the hole. He's still somewhere down here. And maybe actually for you, the idea very much this morning of being said, well, go in the strength that you've got is somewhat even slightly offensive. That God would show up to Gideon in the midst of the mess that he's in, hiding from his enemies in a hole, doing something you should be doing out in the open. For 7 years, they've been in a situation and oppressed by these people. And he says, go in the strength that you've got. I told a story 2 weeks ago about finding myself one evening sat on the kitchen floor in tears. And for God to show up in the midst of that kind of thing and say, well, go with the strength that you've got. Really, God? Really? It feels a little bit like God is messing with Gideon a little bit. But Gideon is polite once again. Pardon me, Lord, but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family. How can I change this situation? I'm down here. I'm in the hole, you might have noticed. I'm not a leader. I'm not important. I'm not significant. I'm not in control. And frankly, it's not my responsibility to do anything about it. And in some ways, Gideon hits on a little bit of the truth for us sometimes when we find ourselves down there, which is just sometimes we would rather stay down there than do anything about it. The truth is, sometimes we'd rather stay in the hole than be challenged to get out of it. It certainly would have been easier for Gideon to just carry on in the hole than to do the things God then called him to do. We see a really strong parallel with Moses in this kind of call that Gideon and Moses receive. You can read the story of Moses, of God calling him in Exodus chapter 3 and 4. It's when God appears to Moses in the burning bush. And again, it feels like Moses is trying to kind of just get out of what God is calling him to do. The first thing God says, I'm going to go send you to do this. And Moses says, Well, who am I that I could go and do that, God? And God affirms again that he's going to call him and send us to do this. And then God says, well, yeah, but what if I go to the people and they say, who are you? Who's this God? And he says, well, I'll tell you who I am. And he says, well, but what if I go to them and I tell them that, but they say, well, God hasn't really appeared to you. You know, what should I say to them then? And he said, well, I'll give you these signs that you can show them to show them that I'm really with you. Yeah, but you want me to go and talk to them? And I'm not very good at talking. I'm not very good at putting things together. I don't get the rules of grammar. I can't do that and go and talk to them. He says, well, it's okay because I'll be with you. And then finally, we get to kind of the real truth behind it in Exodus 4:13. Moses says, please send someone else. I'd rather stay here in the desert than go and do what it is you're asking me to do. Of course, Moses doesn't go alone. He goes with another. God doesn't send us on our own in these things. But God says, go. And the difference, the significance of what he says to Gideon and he says to us, in response to him, he says, I will be with you. I will be with you. Go in the strength that you have, because I will be with you. The difference that God offers isn't saying it's all right because you can do it. He doesn't give Gideon a pep talk to say, actually, people, I can see in you things that you can't see in yourself. You really can do this. You just need to go and give it a go. He says, go with what you've got. You're in a hole. That's fine. You go, and I'll be with you as you go. We know that we haven't got the strength. We know that we can't do it ourselves. But God offers his presence and his power that we need to look to him. And again and again and again, as we look through the Bible, we see God makes exactly this point over and over again. that it's his power and it's his strength that we go in. You find it all the way back in Genesis. Is anything too hard for the Lord? Or look at around the birth of Jesus. For no word from God will ever fail. Or even Job. I know that you can do all things. No purpose of yours can be thwarted. Or Jeremiah, our sovereign Lord, you've made the heavens and the earth by your great power and outstretched arm. Nothing is too hard for you. Or Matthew, the words of Jesus. Jesus looked at them and said, with man this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. Or finally, words from Paul. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. Again and again, we get this picture that it's not about depending upon our own strength, but looking to God. But sometimes we then hear all those things. We go, well, all these verses, you know, we write this verse sometimes down on a wall or somewhere, or highlight it in our Bible. We come back to it again and again, and we go, oh, well, I should be okay then, because I've got these promises. I know that I'm weak, but God's strong, so everything will be fine, and I will be all right. And I should be confident. I shouldn't be scared. I shouldn't be afraid. I shouldn't struggle. I shouldn't doubt. I shouldn't have questions because I've got all these promises. But actually, as we look at Gideon and what happens next, we find that it continues to be okay, not to be okay. The next part of the story that we didn't read earlier, the first step for Gideon, God challenges him to go and destroy the altars that had been made to Baal, the false worship that his family and his people were doing at the time. Go and destroy them, God says. And Gideon obeys and goes and does what God says, but there's a particular way that he does it in verse 27. Because he was afraid of his family and the people, he did it at night. God shows up, he gives him this promise, he gives him a sign actually just before this as well. He goes and brings an offering and God burns it up. We get this real kind of affirmation for Gideon that God is with him. And he's kind of got this point of being, okay, I'm willing to do it, God, but... And he's afraid. He's still afraid. But it's okay, he goes and he does what God asks of him to do. As the story goes on, in verse 34, we read about Gideon. He blows a trumpet, the Spirit of God comes upon him, and he blows a trumpet, and he begins to summon an army together to come and follow him. God's power comes on him, and he starts doing the things that he thought he couldn't do. And he does it because God's strength is at work in him, God's Spirit at work in him. And he summons this army together. And suddenly there's all these people coming, and this army begins to amass around him. But he's still got these doubts and this uncertainty about what God is doing. And this is where we come to a bit that for those who are familiar with the story and grew up in church or whatever, Gideon and his fleece. And it's a story that we might tell in Sunday school, that we might have grown up with, that sometimes has kind of made it into Christianese, Christian language. We say something, we think God might have said something to us, and we say to someone, well, I'm just putting out a fleece. Whatever that means, because we feel this is something we're imitating. And really, actually, what comes along here is Gideon is basically doubting what God has said. If you will save Israel by my hand, and as you've promised, look, I'll put a wool fleece on the threshing floor, and there's some stuff to do with dew and it being wet. And he's looking for a sign from God to saying, are you really going to do what it is that you said you're going to do? And then he does it once, and then actually feels that maybe that wasn't quite miraculous enough, so we're going to do it again, but we're going to do it in the reverse this time. And he says, oh, don't be angry with me. Let me just make one more request. Allow me one more test with the fleece. And actually, it seems to me that Gideon, even though God said this to him and said it quite clearly, this army is amassing around him, he's afraid. And he's doubting. As we go through this series a bit further towards the end, Terry's going to talk more specifically about doubts, and it will come up a couple of times through the series, I suspect. But the point is here, Gideon still isn't okay. And actually, God meets him where he is. God meets him in this request for a sign, in assuring him and affirming him, saying, I am with you, and I am going to do what I've promised. It's okay not to be okay, because God meets us in our weakness with his strength. And it seems that at times, God delights to do that. He actually delights, and his purpose, in fact, is that he will meet us in our weakness with his strength. Because that's entirely the point that he wants to make. As the story of Gideon goes on, for some will know it well, Gideon amasses this army together, and 30,000 men come together to form this army that they're going to go and fight with. 30,000 people come together, which is still, they're still not enough. It is not enough to go and fight the armies who are against him. I think they had something like 70,000 who were there fighting or something along those lines. It was still, the odds were stacked against them. And God says, no, that's too many. There's too many. Your army is too big. And so through a couple of ways, God reduces down his army from 30,000 down to 300. And says, okay, that's the right number. 300, that's a good number to go on taking an army of tens of thousands. And again, it's a story that we may know or have been taught in Sunday school or remember or know something about. And it's easy to miss the point of what God is doing through that, because the point is hidden away right at the start of the chapter. Judges chapter 7, verse 2. The Lord said to Gideon, you have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me. God, in fact, deliberately makes Gideon make his army smaller, make himself weaker, so that they might see they don't do it in their own strength, but they've done it in God's strength. That we do these things not on our own strength, but in his. And sometimes that's exactly the point. Paul puts it like this in 1 Corinthians. God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. He chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. 2 weeks ago, as I said, I spoke about something that was going on for me in that week, and actually where I was struggling and found myself at a real point of weakness and brokenness. And one of the things that we were facing as a family at that point, aside from the things that were going on in the life of the church, that on that Sunday, the Tuesday following it, our son Caleb, who's 8, was due to go into hospital to have an operation. And it was just one of those other things amongst everything else that was going on in our lives at that time. And we kind of been, in some ways, it had been on the back of our minds because of everything else going on. But obviously, when you get to the day, suddenly it comes to the forefront of your mind. There's nothing quite like going into hospital for things to become a little bit more real. And so I went in that day with Caleb to the hospital. And at that point, I could tell that for Caleb, the nerves were starting to build for him. And I could tell that also for me, the nerves were starting to build for me. This was suddenly becoming a little bit more real. And of course, the reality of that too is that we knew he was going to have about a week of kind of recovering and being at home and annoying me and Kate, my wife, and that it was just going to be one of those other things that just made life all the more difficult over the next few weeks as he was off school and at home and we needed to be around or not take him on the school run because if he'd be recovering and all those kind of things. We're just thinking, oh, another thing just to make it all harder. And then we got in there and we were waiting for a while and we got showed through to a bed and went in and sat and waiting around in the bed for a while. Caleb was starting to get really hungry because he, you know, not being able to eat any food as he waited for the operation. So I ate a cheese sandwich. and then the surgeon came around who we'd met before and examined Caleb before, and the surgeon came along. And he did a couple of checks on Caleb and looked at him and did a couple of things and went, no, you're fine. You don't need this anymore. You can go home. What? He sorted himself out. You can go home. Like now? Yeah. Caleb, of course, says, does that mean I can eat lunch? And I'm not, it is something that could have sorted itself out, and it had sorted itself out, and I'm not standing here to kind of claim a medical miracle, but I am hugely thankful, first of all, for Caleb, that he didn't have to go through that, but secondly, for us as a family at that point, that to me, God met us in where we were weak and struggling, and in his strength, he gave us a way through. If you're down in the hole, when you find yourself in the depths, if you're there now or next time you're there, would you hear the call that God says, go in the strength that you've got. You don't have to stay there. I will be with you. And I'll meet your weakness with my strength. This final point, I think perhaps it's just for a few people. Verse 12, when God shows up to Gideon and just says, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. There's a sense in which that's just funny, because it's just ironic to turn up to someone who's so hidden away and to say, you're a mighty warrior. But Gideon has to take that with a mixture of irony and faith. Irony because it's just so not true. But faith, that is what God will make him. And I think maybe for just one or two, you know that God said something to you, and you know it's just not true. It's laughable that God would call you to do that or say that to you or whatever it might be. And God perhaps is calling you to take those words with a mixture of irony and faith to know that it really isn't true right now, but to believe that it's what he can do. Go in the strength that you have, because I will be with you. Laura's going to lead us as we continue in worship and reflection and as we prepare to share in communion together.